It's really nice to be back with you. Today is the last day of November, and I hope you've been having a wonderful Thanksgiving season. And I just want to begin today by thanking you so much for supporting the podcast with your engagement and your contributions, and also for supporting the business of my online store this year. I'm enormously grateful to each of you for your part in allowing me to do what I love to do. So thank you for that. And I have all kinds of really fun and exciting updates on the site at lorigreen.net. If you haven't checked in a while, do that, because there's some beautiful things for the gift giving time of year. And it's all very much centered around artist, indie-driven selections, you know, good impact on the planet choices, etc. But also soulful, beautiful pieces that add that feeling of soul to the home or to the space or to the body. So I hope you enjoy what I've created there and what others are offering in partnership there. It's just a really kind of magical collection. And if you're not signed up for my newsletter, do that, because there's special offerings that come out through that I would love for you to be connected with. So just a pin in that, because I've worked basically from mid-November on just getting all of that ready, and I'm really proud of it and love it. So check that out. And I also wanted to note that the podcast, so Anchor is who hosts the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You might listen to it from another space, but I produce it through Anchor, and they send out analytics, you know, at the end of the year. And they sent this out last night, and I had to just like give a shout out to all of us. This just amazes me. It says, your 2022 year wrapped is ready. And it says, you created 1,070 minutes of new content. That's 79% more than the average creator. So I'm just like, yay us. And I don't know, that's pretty cool. And I see something happening in the podcast. Like when I get up in the morning and sit with Tippy on the couch and have a cup of coffee and sort of ease into my day, I will often pull up the podcast and see what's happening there. And there's a little quickening happening, or let's just call it a big quickening. And I'm so enormously touched by that. It's finding people. And maybe I've mentioned this in the past, but the most listened to episode thus far is the one where I talk about quote unquote reality. And I touch on my psychedelic experience there. And that's the most listened to one. And I just find that so interesting. And definitely all of these are from my heart, but that was definitely from my heart. That was such a major, major moment in my life and continues to be. So anyway, that's just a bit of what's happening. And if you are getting my newsletter, I'm starting the season of Advent tomorrow, but our countdown will be to the winter solstice. And each day I'll send out just a very brief, because I know we're so inundated with activity and information and busyness this time of year. But I'm going to send out just a brief thought for the day and then a link to a special or an offering in regards to my shop that, you know, is extended to my soul family here through the podcast and through the shop. So if you're interested in receiving that, be sure you're on my mailing list. And again, you can find all that at lorigreen.net. So I hope you're well. And here's the plan for the rest of the year, the calendar year. We want to finish the conversation today about the heroine's journey. And wow, I've been so living this journey, just the whole autumnal season. And I have so much to share with you today. So we're going to finish that. Not that that work won't be ongoing in each of our lives, but we'll at least finish that conversation in terms of the Inanna myth that we've been exploring. And then I feel deeply grateful that, you know, I took that journey very seriously. I knew I was in it. I had no question that I was deeply involved in that inner work. And I have been blessed with an enormous boon to return and share for those who might be interested in. And it's guiding my life right now. It's something I feel so enormously grateful for. And that's what I want to start with you all in December. I'm actually launching an 8-episode series that I'll talk about at the end of the podcast here today and kind of set you up for that. And we're going to do 3 of those because they're going to be slightly shorter than my typical podcast. It's easy for me to cover, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half with you all. And this new series that I'm going to be doing that for me is so transformative, they'll be slightly shorter because I know our bandwidth, you know, is shorter in December oftentimes. And I don't want to add to any cacophony, but also these are like power doses. Like the information is super concentrated and super focused and super powerful. So we don't need a lot of time. We just kind of need to sit with it a bit and have just these little sessions, sort of mini sessions. So I'm going to begin that in December, and we're going to do 3 in December and then move on into the new year. And I chose, you know, this time of year to begin this. I had contemplated whether I should start in 2023, but folks often find December really triggering, and I'm like, let's jump in now. You know, why not? It's only going to help. And it really helps me not react to anything. And that's such an amazing feeling. And anyway, I'm so delighted to share that with you. And again, I'll say a little bit more of that at the end of this podcast. I'm learning how to tease. Are you noticing? So I gave you some updates there. Okay. Oh, the moon. The beaver moon is concluded. And in my book of poetry, there was still one poem that I wanted to share with you from the Beaver Moon collection because it so echoed what we're talking about in regard to the heroine's journey and Inanna. So I'm going to begin with that. But we are right now very much in the cold moon cycles and phase. So the new moon and the waxing moon, we're in the waxing moon phase. So I'll be sharing 3 poems with you today. One to conclude the beaver moon because it was so intimately tied with our Inanna work. And then the new moon and the waxing moon for the cold moon. So we'll jump right in and begin in that way today to sort of set the mood. We'll revisit the Inanna storyline because I know it's been a while and I want to get us all back on the same page with that. But if you remember, we moved through the 7 gates that she had to as she visited the underworld. And I just wanted to set this up for this first poem because we linked those ideas to the chakra system last time. And whether you know, do chakras or not, it really doesn't matter. It's a link to all the areas of our body that have corresponding areas to our lives. So it was a beautiful way of covering a fullness of our life experience. So they're from the Hindu tradition and they're energy centers. But again, the point was that we're covering our external world, material, bodily security sense all the way up to our sort of spiritual connection with the divine, however you define that. So, you know, it's just a kind of a great system where you cover everything in between. So, you know, we went through that last time and asked some interesting questions at those gates, sort of in a meditative, contemplative session last time. And so today we'll pick up the story again. And I noted, if you're not familiar with the Inanna story, that after she gets through all those gates and she's stripped bare and she is standing before her sister Ereshkigal in the underworld, she is deeply humbled. She is vulnerable. And, you know, an amazing exchange happens there, which we're going to dive into today. And things don't get better for Inanna quite yet. So there's this moment of pure vulnerability deep in the underworld where she sort of has to take another hit. And it's really a death rebirth cycle. And I just wanted to invoke that space as I read this poem to you, which ended actually in the Beaver Moon. And I wrote this several years ago, but I just find it so synchronistic that for me, it speaks to this moment. Because when we're that vulnerable, when we're that stripped bare, we have to trust something. We have to trust our authenticity, our divine nature. We have to trust that stripping down process. And that takes both courage and surrender. You know, I've often thought in the last month, the difference between strength and power. And every human being I know can be really, really strong. I mean, that's part of being here. It seems like we learn how to be strong in different areas of our lives. And, you know, I think we all get an A in strength. And I know you know that about yourself. I certainly know that about myself. But there comes a point where I'm like, I am over this, just having to dig in and be strong again, because it seems to me like there's a larger purpose, and I would call that power. And I don't mean power in an earthly, political or financial or whatever sense, although all those can be included. I'm talking about the power of the authentic self and the divine connection that is not only you, but it's the flow state flowing through you that's connected to the unseen and all the resources that are brought to bear when we are in that sort of quantum space, in that surrendered divine space. Strength to me is sort of going at it alone. And there's a part of us that has to learn to do that. But I'm more about, where do I connect with true power now? Not to wield it on my own behalf or vanquish anything or, you know, be an ass. I'm talking about just creating the life that is so joyful, creating the reality that I choose to be in, and then also being in that seat of power when things aren't as maybe my first choice coming at me, and I can be still and still stay centered. So as Inanna is deep in trouble, really, here's what I think we're needing to access. And this is the deep feminine. This is goddess territory. And this is not Inanna herself. This is not Ereshkigal herself. It's the greater process that is acting itself out through the whole myth, if I can say it that way. So this is what I wrote. "Keep warm," she said. "Rest," she said. "Now is the time to hear the inner roaring, the inner silence," she said. "When in doubt, wait," she said. "When you want to push, release," she said. "Only the heart knows now," she said. "You are at the most propitious moment," she said. "Believe it," she said. "This is the new work," she said. "This is the way now," she said. "You will be amazed," she said. "I need you," she said. "I accept," I said. So for me, this is where Inanna's at. This is bigger than Inanna. This is bigger than Ereshkigal. This is the process of death, egoic death, and rebirth and transformation. And my dear friend, John Ferrick, who we correspond with often, and you'll remember following the podcast that after I did Iron John and we explored that myth together, I had a really nice interview and conversation with John Ferrick because he knows a lot about the men's movement. He knows a lot about that story. And he and I connected here the last, week or so. And it was so lovely because he follows the podcast. And, we chatted a bit through email about the heroine's journey and how it's different and, how it's the same and, what's going on there. Because, again, the hero and the heroine apply to all of us. We all have these aspects within our own psyche. But this unique journey of the heroine is definitely has its distinctions. And John sent this lovely email that I think really fits beautifully right now on the heels of this poem that I wrote. And I was so grateful for this. So I'm thanking you now, John. I know you're listening. I love you, friend. And he sent this. This is work by Marion Woodman, and we've covered her together, too, in the podcast. We've definitely pulled from her work before. But this is from her book, Dancing in the Flames, which, incidentally, is on the bookshop on the website, if you want to connect with that. But she is a Jungian analyst, recently passed just a few years ago, but just left such a legacy of work about the divine feminine. And she makes a really, really important distinction about what's going on when we're talking about the Great Mother versus the Goddess. And I love this. And this really applies to the heroine's journey. And again, thanking John for connecting me with this because I had not read this. And it just rang all the bells when John sent this to me. So this is Marion Woodman's work from Dancing in the Flames. And there are two passages here. Quote, "The goddess, as distinct from the divine mother, while remaining immanent in nature and while demanding sacrifice, did not require blood sacrifice. Worship of the goddess required a movement from the literal and concrete to the symbolic, a movement that launched a radical mutation of consciousness." So there's a lot going on there, but we are not talking about honoring an external anything. We are in our interiority, our psychic depths that really you can't go any deeper than this, although, there's infinity. But you know what I mean. I mean, like, this is really the core of who our identity is. Where we access our true identity. And the goddess is even more distinct, more integral than even Divine Mother, which is an incredibly powerful archetype. I mean, really, of course. But that, as I'm reading this, is more of an external relationship. Not that we can't enjoy this idea of motherhood, but it's really a role. It's a role. Whereas goddess, this is straight to our divinity. And so there's another passage that John linked me to. So again, Marion Woodman here, quote, worship of the Great Mother meant identifying with her and trying to appease her great power over one's life by offering a sacrifice outside of oneself. The worship of the goddess, on the other hand, involved entering into a process of self-transformation. In order to reach the desired level of archetypal oneness, one had to transcend ego boundaries. And that's where I see we are in the Inanna story. And honoring the Great Mother externally in our world, on our planet, in our roles as mothers, in our roles as nurturing ourselves. That's all fantastic. But there's more, even though it's very archetypal, there's more of an external sensibility to that. And the goddess is like this core power. And that's where we are. So I would offer that this Inanna, Ereshkigal duality that's going on deep, deep, deep in the underworld is all sort of in the container space of transformation that belongs to the goddess herself. A rebirth is happening. And remember from last time that we have this stripping down, stripping down, stripping down of Inanna as she goes through these gates. But also, so paradoxically, Ereshkigal, who is mourning her spouse, is in the throes of childbirth. So, you know, we have all these colliding archetypal symbols in this story that are just so profound, but are really, in my estimation, and riffing off what we just read from Marion Woodman. We're talking about the deep goddess transformation that's going to happen or is happening within each of us individually. I mean, that I don't think it gets much more powerful than that. You know, I'm just thinking, if I can continue to surrender to that, I mean, that changes everything. And I think when I had my psychedelic experience that I spoke of, in the episode Reality, you know, I got to meet that aspect of myself, just a glimpse, but that's how I would define what that was. It was like me with no story, no filters, no past, no roles, no, you know, human journey and memories. It was just me in my white lightning sense. And it was so humbling and powerful at the same time. I was just in awe. And that must be the container of what's happening in this Inanna story, this fire of transformation, which belongs to the deep feminine, the deep goddess work itself. And I just feel so honored to be talking about it, to know about it, to be living it. I mean, I don't think things get much juicier than that. So, let me share also the other two moons, and then we'll conclude our Inanna story. This is the new moon for the cold moon. And back to my analytics for the podcast, I'm just so touched that there are people that are not living in the Northern Hemisphere that are following this podcast. So I know you all aren't in winter right now, but I'm so glad you're here. And I know this seasonally might be a 180 from where you are right now. But, you know, when this applies to you, definitely the cold moon will, you know, will present itself seasonally for you at some point. But here we go in the Northern Hemisphere with the new cold moon. The sun slides low, diffused light, distant. And the cold moon declares, her icy silver presence unapologetic, unafraid, the leveling, balancing the spectrum. It is the cold moon's hour. I learn from her stance, proud in the night. I learn from her direct, unflinching light. I learn from her purity, the manner by which she defines herself. I learn from her. And here's the cold, waxing moon. The poets speak of it, ice and fire, fire and ice. The alchemical sensibility courts it, the extremes, and that which happens in the space just beyond the extremes. The cold right now is a shattering cold, penetrating. Many in my midst know the frigid piercing. What to do, what to do, what to do. And that's just it. There is nothing to do except know. These mighty forces, fire and ice, are bound in their waltz across time. They'll meet, they'll bow, they'll rise in all their fierce and sparking wonder, and they will play their masterful part in timely surrender to the tempering wand of life herself. I know when I wrote that, I was living in Wyoming, and it can indeed be so shattering in the cold. And here in North Carolina, there are cold moments for sure, but sort of that bone-chilling cold I haven't experienced in a while externally. But I know internally, sometimes we feel as though the death cycle, the cold, the lack of life will go on forever. And we enter a really deep bone trust at that time. And there's no way through that, but through it, we have to experience what it is like to lean on that authentic divine self and know that it won't let you down. And when we have a lot of stories going around in our minds about the 102 ways that life has, you know, provided stories and opportunities and instances to label disappointment or betrayal or lack of regard, lack of abundance of any kind, it's so important to know that the whole idea of the polarities, you know, that's part of the dance, fire and ice, up, down, north, south, light, dark. But the thing we are accessing, the thing that is really us, is the space in which all of that theater takes place. It's so much larger than the polarities. And to trust that and to learn a new way of interacting with polarities as they present themselves, that seems to me to be such an integral part of the heroine's journey and of Inanna's story. So, by way of refreshing our memory about the cycle of the heroine's journey, just real quick, I want to just go through the circle of the steps. Again, knowing that not everything proceeds in order, and we may revisit phases and go forward again and what have you. But initially, there is that separation from the feminine early on, which is followed by an identification with the masculine and the gathering of allies. Then the road of trials, meeting ogres and dragons, finding the boon of success. This is definitely an external success here. Awakening to feelings of spiritual aridity. In other words, the death. then where we left off last time, initiation and descent to the goddess, and we talked about going through the seven gates. After that, there's an urgent yearning to reconnect with the feminine, healing the split, then moving into healing the wounded masculine, and then sort of the inner marriage, you could say, the integration of masculine and feminine. So that's sort of the lay of the land. And what I want to do now is just, you know, have story time again for a moment and just read this myth again, not to retread old ground, but to just get us back in that liminal and numinous space of the myth. And we'll then discuss what's happening after the gates, but I want to sort of lull us back in to the non-rational part of our experience, because that's where the wisdom gets through. That's the power of storytelling. So this particular version comes from an excerpt by Amy Peck. So she says, below is an abridged version of the descent myth of Inanna. And she, in turn, took some passages from a very seminal work on Inanna, which is by Diane Wolkstein and Samuel Noah Kramer's book. And it's called Inanna, Queen of Heaven and Earth, Her Stories and Hymns from Sumer. And that's sort of considered definitely, you know, a powerhouse of an authority in this work. So I wanted to, you know, give these two, three actually authors their due. And so reading from Amy Peck's excerpt, again, the original story, there are passages in here that come from the original Sumerian scripts. And it opens with one of those, from the great above, she opened her ear to the great below. Inanna chose to abandon heaven and earth to descend to the underworld. In Sumerian, the word for ear and wisdom is the same and connotes mind. So this first line of the descent poem could be interpreted that Inanna opened her mind to receive the wisdom of the underworld, or perhaps something above the underworld called to her. Perhaps Inanna was summoned to gain the knowledge of life, death, and rebirth. In any respect, she was determined to visit her dark older sister Ereshkigal, queen of the underworld, to ostensibly pay her respects and witness the funeral rites of Ereshkigal's husband. Little did she realize that her neglected and jealous sister would not divulge the mysteries of death simply by allowing Inanna to observe the rites of another. Inanna would have to learn the ways of the underworld by dying herself and by giving up more than just her own life. The holy priestess abandoned her seven temples and prepared herself for her journey. She gathered up the seven laws and adorned herself with the seven accoutrements of her earthly queenship. Again, from the original texts, she placed the shagura, the crown of the step, on her head. She arranged the dark locks of her hair across her forehead. She tied the small lapis beads around her neck, let the double strand of beads fall to her breast, and wrapped the royal robe around her body. She daubed her eyes with the ointment called Let Him Come, Let Him Come, bound the breastplate called Come, Man, Come around her chest, slipped the gold ring over her wrist, and took the lapis measuring rod and the line in her hand. Then she set out for the underworld with her faithful maidservant, Ninshubur. Before Inanna arrived at the gates of the underworld, she instructed Ninshubur what to do in case she could not return on her own from the underworld. from the scripts again. She spoke to her, saying, "Nineveh, my constant support, if I do not return, set up a lament for me by the ruins, beat the drum for me in the assembly places, tear at your eyes, at your mouth, at your thighs, and go to the temple of my fathers to ask for help." Inanna told her servant to enlist the aid of the gods in case she didn't return, her father's fathers and her mother's fathers. At last, the Queen of Heaven arrived at the gates to the underworld, the entrance to the Ker. She cried out in a fierce voice, "Open the gate, open the door, gatekeeper. I alone would enter." The gatekeeper told Inanna to wait while he sought the reply of the queen of the underworld, Ereshkigal. Ereshkigal commanded her gatekeeper, "Come, Neti, my chief, gatekeeper of the Ker, heed my words. Bolt the 7 gates of the underworld. Then, one by one, open each gate a crack. Let Inanna enter. As she enters, remove her royal garments. Let the holy priestess of heaven enter, bowed low." And thus so, at each of the 7 gates, Inanna was ordered to relinquish her adornments. At the first gate, she gave up her crown, next her small lapis beads, then the double strand of lapis, then the breastplate. At the 5th gate, she surrendered her gold ring from her wrist. At the 6th gate, she gave up her lapis measuring rod and line. Then finally, at the 7th gate, from her body, the royal robe was removed. At each gate, when commanded to surrender her royal garments, Inanna objected, "What is this?" But she was only told, "Quiet, Inanna. The ways of the underworld are perfect. They may not be questioned." Naked and bowed low, Inanna entered the throne room. Ereshkigal rose from her throne. Inanna started toward the throne. The Anuana, the judges of the underworld, surrounded her. They passed judgment against her. Then Ereshkigal fastened on Inanna the eye of death. She spoke against her the word of wrath. She uttered against her the cry of guilt. She struck her. Inanna was turned into a corpse, a piece of rotting meat, and was hung from a hook on the wall. 3 days and 3 nights passed, and when Inanna did not return, her faithful servant, Nineveh, began her lament and her quest to aid her lost queen. She went to each father with her plea for help. And finally, the God of Wisdom listened. He created 2 creatures, the Kugara and the Galatur, neither male nor female, fashioned them from the dirt of his fingernails and instructed them to enter the underworld like flies. He gave the food of life to the Kugara and the water of life to the Galatur. He told them to approach Ereshkigal. He said to them, "Ereshkigal, the queen of the underworld, is moaning with the cries of a woman about to give birth." He instructed the creatures to moan and cry along with Ereshkigal and told them that as they did so, Ereshkigal would be pleased and offer them a gift. The Kugara and the Galatur did as bade. They entered the throne room and moaned and groaned with the laboring queen of the underworld until the queen stopped and looked at them. She asked them, "Who are you, moaning, groaning, sighing with me? If you are gods, I will bless you. If you are mortals, I will give you a gift." The creatures then requested that they be given the corpse that was hanging from the hook on the wall. The corpse was given to them, and the Kugara sprinkled the food of life on the corpse, and the Galatur sprinkled the water of life on the corpse. And Inanna rose. But her journey was not over yet, nor had she learned that the ways of the underworld are perfect. As she was about to ascend, the Anuana, the judges of the underworld, seized the Queen of Heaven and Earth and said, "No one ascends from the underworld unmarked. If Inanna wishes to return from the underworld, she must provide someone in her place." To ensure this order was fulfilled, 2 demons called Gala, armed with a scepter and mace, returned with Inanna to the upper world to capture Inanna's replacement. They first tried to take Ninshubar, but Inanna cried, "No, she is my constant support. Because of her, my life was saved. I will never give Ninshubar to her." Then they came upon her sons. But each had shown their devotion to Inanna, and she refused to allow them to take the sons either. Finally, they met up with Inanna's husband, Dumuzi. But when Inanna found him sitting arrogantly on his throne, without signs of lament for his missing wife, she spoke against him the word of wrath. The Gala attacked him. Dumuzi fled and tried to evade them with the help of a friend and his devoted sister, Geshtinanna, who hid him in ditches. The demons tried to bribe Geshtinanna to tell them where Dumuzi hid, but she would not speak. So the Gala left her and went on to Dumuzi's friend. The friend betrayed Dumuzi, and the Gala found the hiding king. Yet Dumuzi escaped again and again until at last the demons overpowered him while he hid in the sheepfold of his sister. When at last Inanna realized that Dumuzi was captured and doomed to the underworld, she became remorseful and lamented the loss of her beloved bridegroom, her husband. And when she saw the grief of Geshtinanna, who was wandering about the city weeping, Inanna felt compassion. Together, aided by a holy fly, Inanna and Geshtinanna found Dumuzi weeping at the edges of the steppe. Inanna took Dumuzi by the hand and said, "You will go to the underworld half the year. Your sister, since she has asked, will go to the other half. On the day you are called, that day you will be taken. On the day Geshtinanna is called, that day you will be set free." Inanna placed Dumuzi in the hands of the Eternal. "Holy Ereshkigal, great is your renown. Holy Ereshkigal, I sing your praises." And thus Inanna, Queen of Heaven and Earth, came to respect the ways of the underworld. It's such a fascinating story. And, you know, if you're going through something like this in your own life, if you're anything like me, you're like, "I need more detail." Like, what is happening here? I don't know if I particularly understand this. And in my experience, although we have these signposts along the way, both in The Heroine's Journey by Maureen Murdoch and also in the myth of Inanna, it is my experience that each of us is going to have a part of this journey that will be unique to us alone. And so I think that accounts for some of the vague lack of description, if you will, because this is unique to the strengths and weaknesses and storylines that we're bringing into the underworld with us. I do love, love, love this line that the underworld is perfect and that its ways must not be questioned. And in so many folk and fairy tales, whether you're meeting the Baba Yaga, there comes a moment when the deep mystery, the profound mystery that we are not going to understand on this side of life, presents itself, and it has its own rules, it has its own way of being, it has its own agency, it has its own request, it has its own way of completing the transformation into rebirth. And I don't think we get, you know, specific details regarding that. We have to surrender to that. And again, I do really genuinely suspect that it's going to take a slightly different color for each of us. And so, you know, Inanna, having gone through all these gates and then getting to hang on a hook for a while, I mean, my God, you know, this is a deep stripping away of all the things, all of the roles, all of the ideas and beliefs and systems and things that we think make us safe and protected and secure, all of that is stripped bare. And we are left with the void, essentially. And the choice to trust it, to lean into it, to lean into that absolute power, and also trust that there's an absolute nurturance there as well. If you remember back to my psychedelic journey that I spoke of in the past podcast, I ended up screaming the word love again and again and again and again. That was not a conscious thing on my part. But when I saw what I saw, however you describe that, that's what I called it, love. And so this juxtaposition of meeting the absolute, the silence, and then also meeting love and trust. You know, these sound like the ultimate paradoxes, but this is our work. This is our journey in discovering the deep feminine. And, you know, following that wheel, that arc of discovery of the heroine's journey, Maureen Murdoch talks about the reunion of masculine and feminine. And it's so much larger than that, because when we reconnect with our authentic self, partnership of any kind takes on an entirely different hue and experience, because suddenly you are so much larger than the sum of your parts. You have your inner masculine and your inner feminine, and they are somehow revivified. But your relationship to everything external is massively different going forward from that point. And again, you are so much larger than the sum of your parts. The greatest boon, the greatest gift that you bring back to the external world is your very being. You are here for the soul's enjoyment. And so you don't have to go around teaching this or, you know, hosting a podcast or anything of the kind. Do what is your joy. The fact that you have gone through this process of rebirth is what matters. You don't have to go do anything then. But I think it's such a mark of grace that other gifts do attend this reemergence to the topside world. And you see the echoes there from the Persephone myth that's actually later chronologically than the Inanna myth about the seasonal times above and below. But there is a rebirth, and that's something that we can enjoy and celebrate, but all the while never getting lost in the Maya, in the illusory external stuff again, because we know who we are. We know who we are, and we move from that space, and we take the forms and enjoy them, but we take them very, very lightly. So I'm not here to say, oh, I've accomplished the heroine's journey. This is not something that you're one and done. You know, this is an ongoing unfolding and reemergence. But I will say that I am somehow sensing a resurfacing or a growing light. And I find that so precious, knowing that the winter solstice also is arriving shortly. And that is, in our part of the world, a return to that light again. But having said all this, noting that your beingness, is the ultimate gift of this process. But I am discovering some attending gifts, and I want to share those with you. And a couple weeks ago, I pet sat for a friend of mine, so I was back and forth between her house and my house a lot during the weekend. And while I was at her house, it was lovely because, you know, you can't do laundry or, you know, your chores or whatever. So I was doing a lot more reading, and I had watched a few videos, and, you know, I was just kind of indulging in some projects that I hadn't while home. And I can't even remember the series of events that led me to this link. And that's why I know it was a gift from the underworld, because I can't sort of even backtrack and recreate how it landed in my lap. But I discovered a link to a film called Awake in the Darkness by Aubrey Marcus. Aubrey Marcus is a male inspirational coach sort of person. You know, he's in the coaching space, and he has, you know, a website and all the rest of it, but I don't know anything about him, so I'm neither endorsing or not endorsing him and his work. But I, you know, he seems like he's a good person. I just don't know that much about him or his approach. But what I was fascinated by was this film that he did, where he video logs going into complete darkness for 1 week and what happened by doing that. And the film, which I will link to in the show notes here, I highly recommend you take the time to watch. It's not that long, but it's powerful. It's really powerful. And it's showing a flavor of what might be happening in the deep, deep underworld. Because again, I believe it colors slightly for each of us in a unique way. I think that's why we don't have all these steps, you know, as she, Inanna, is hanging on the hook. You know, we don't know what's going on there. We're entering the realm of the deep, deep mystery. And we have to trust that. We have to trust the underworld and its process and know that it is perfect. But I really suspect that it's slightly unique for each of us what happens there. And this video of Aubrey Marcus going into the darkness for 1 week. So let me just read to you a bit of this. He starts, quote, "Every man is two men. One is awake in the darkness, the other asleep in the light," which is a quote from Khalil Gibran. And Aubrey Marcus says, "By the end of 2019, I was physically healthy, but inside I was struggling. My 8-year relationship with my fiance had ended, and I could feel my time as CEO of Onnit was coming to a close. I was also still unable to find resolution with my father's mental disorders, and the deeper reasons for my suffering were still lurking in the shadows. I heard about darkness therapy from Aaron Alexander, which was one of many signs to take the plunge into the greater unknown. He told me of a house in the Black Forest outside Frankfurt, Germany, near a town whose name translates to the middle of nowhere. The house is owned by a family whose matriarch studied in the Hindu tradition and learned darkness therapy by staying in isolation in a cave. She is the real deal. In their house, there was a light-proofed room that you can pay to spend up to a month in, away from your job, your friends, your family, your life, your world. And possibly the most significant aspect is the constant, ever-present pitch darkness. People who've been there say that room breaks you. But what did I have to fear? As I said, I was already pretty fucked up, so I signed up." So this film is that journey and what happens. And I was unaware that after an extended period of time in complete darkness, that the brain starts to release DMT, dimethyltryptamine. I had no idea that that happened. And so I was fascinated by that, the convergence of, you know, a psychedelic that can help us catapult to that space and dip into it, or in this case of Aubrey Marcus, spending a week in complete darkness, meeting yourself, meeting the underworld, meeting your own mind and what lies beyond that. And I just can't recommend this enough. So this is one of the gifts that has fallen in my lap in the last 3 weeks. So I will link that. I highly encourage you to connect with that film. It has something special for everyone to take away, you know, unique to your own experience. And it's beautifully illustrated as well. And so I want to offer that. And then in the reading, this same phenomenon happened again to me in the reading about Into the Darkness. At some point along the way, there was this term, I don't know if it's in the film or in similar reading that I was doing alongside of it. Again, if I backtrack, I can't remember how I arrived at this word. So I know it was another nudge from the underworld. And I arrived at this word called transurfing. Transurfing. And I had seen it before about a year ago when I was reading about quantum physics and parallel realities and things of that nature. And I had seen that. And something just said at the time, that is going to be fascinating. You're not quite ready for that. You know, that's all I can tell you. And I didn't dive into that right then. I thought it was super interesting. But it seemed at that moment not to be a moment of readiness for me. But here, spending all this time with Inanna, then watching this documentary about being awake in the darkness, then this third thing happened where I was linked to that word, transurfing, and I could not get that word out of my mind. I could not forget that. And I'm like, transurfing. What do I need to know about that? Do I know something about that? I just couldn't quite place it. And I started to track it down. And that is what our new series is going to be about. And that pivot is a way of conditioning, as I'm starting to understand it, my return from some lengthy time in the underworld. I felt a readiness to start to understand how the material and the internal, the external and the inner worlds interact with each other. And that's what this idea of transurfing really articulately and clearly and succinctly speaks to. And I felt a readiness to begin to absorb some of that. And indeed, it has been such a rush and such a joy. I was so primed for that information that it's lending itself well to talk about it in the future in the podcast, because I need to learn it. So I'm going to teach it. And you know that about me. I am teaching what I'm learning. I really do have a servant's heart about this. But let me read you just a bit about what this idea about transurfing is. This is an excerpt from Thrive Global, and this is written by Denny Van, and it's an article, and it just helps us sort of put a framework around this idea. If you've been on a spiritual journey, you may have come across terms like transurf. The word transurf, noun, and transurfing, verb, is an esoteric term combining two meanings. Trans, meaning to transcend your current reality, to not feed into what is being projected into the material world. And surf, meaning to dive deeper into the multidimensional layers of yourself and activate the metaphysical, unseen part of you. So let me step away from the article here for a minute. I find this such a propitious moment with this deep feminine work, because it's suddenly like, if you're sensing that the self is more with you than it ever has been, the real self, the capital S self, the divine self, it thinks differently. And of course, you don't need a manual about, you know, how to deal with the new you. You know, it's all going to be organic and revelatory of its own answers and pacing and ways of being for you. But having said that, you know, here I had this information about transurfing suddenly, and I was just so ready to absorb it. So back to this article, transcending our current reality is a teaching that has been around for millennia. Surfing and exploring other dimensions and various techniques for exploring have also been around for millennia. To transurf is a state where you can read and feel vibrations, thus begin to read frequencies of the heart. This is the state when the mind comes into the heart and creates a vibrational frequency science is calling coherence. Coherence is measured when the mind and heart create a frequency together but separate from their own. Many people struggle to experience this coherence. The secret is you have to get quiet and you have to get you, or who you think you are, out of the way. You have to become nothing with love. This is where the magic happens. However, the work you have to do is internal. No one can do this work for you. What I mean by getting out of the way is any idea of what you think you are, mom, dad, your career, your past, anything that you identify with. You've heard the term, it's darkest before the dawn. That's what this is like. Is the point in the morning where the sky is the darkest, but the stars shine the brightest. It's that. Becoming this state. You have to get dark and quiet. You have to be still in order to recognize the signs that show you which direction to go. This is the heart speaking to you when you're in this state. This state is where the magic happens. This is where the two parts of you, your human and your beingness, are centered and connected as one. Get quiet, listen to your intuition, and open yourself to the possibilities. Variability is the world's most fundamental quality. Example, nature follows the path of least resistance. So if we look around and say a garden, do we just see only red roses? No, we see all kinds of roses, white, pink, gigantic, or petite. There is variability within variability. And then there's more variability. The world's most fundamental quality is variability. Remember this. Getting into physics a little bit here, science and spirituality at its finest. Physics creates a model of our universe and how we can experience it, see it, touch it, taste it, use our five senses to detect it and understand how it works. So how can you apply them to your life? Any model of the universe represents just one manifestation of reality, and you have to choose in order for it to manifest. Getting past the mind is how you realize this. It's about observing from this multidimensional space within you. This internal space is an information field recording all that was, is, and ever will be. We are physically moving with time and space and into different sectors of this field. Each sector will have its own scripts, roles, and parts to play. You'll have your character and your role to play within that sector. This is why I work with a lot of people who are in the beginning stages of spiritual awakening. They'll be like, I don't know. I just feel like I have this huge download. And they did. Anyway, this person goes on. She's a teacher of this or something. But these are the principles that I suddenly began to become aware of. And I had such a readiness for understanding them because I'm like, oh, this is how the real self thinks. This is how the real self comes back into the world and doesn't go into old habits or old ways of being or old thought systems or old ways of relating with the material. You come back from the underworld with a completely different orientation about how you go about living in the physical. And I feel very, very deeply that we are meant to embrace and love this earthly existence. This is not something to just endure until we check out. This is something to enjoy and delight in and love our way through. I think it matters in ways that I don't even understand. But the rules are different coming out of the underworld about how to relate to it, and transurfing principles are what we will be talking about going forward. Because there are some really thoughtful people that have put some of those principles down. Again, these ideas go across all spiritual disciplines from every corner of the world. They've been around for millennia, but there's certain times when you can hear it, and there's certain times when it seems like, what the hell? I don't even get that. And I feel ready to hear and absorb it now, having spent quite a lot of time in the underworld. And so I'm excited to share that. And if it's coinciding with you at a time where this is appropriate and invigorating for you to hear, then I think that's fantastic. And I want to share, just because I can't imagine many things much more important. And then two, I'm learning it. So I've given you a lot today. It's a big episode for November. And again, moving into December, they'll be shorter, more pithy installments of the podcast, because transurfing is not difficult. It's just a new way of thinking. And so we'll be very direct and focused in talking about that. But if this is speaking to you, it can really change your life, your resurfacing. And I'm so humble to have this landed in my lap. You know, I this is not something I planned. So I'm going to trust it. You know, I'm going to lean into it. Thank you for being here with me today. And I'll be reaching out soon in December, and we'll go on this transurfing adventure together. Until next time, take good care. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.